From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect.
Well, it's Friday, which means another Friday financial update, and often we get about 10 or 15 minutes diving into a topic with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates. But Brian's in studio, and we're going to spend the full hour on a given topic today. Welcome, Brian. Glad you're here.
Yeah, always my pleasure.
I'm really looking forward to today. Actually, I look forward to each week because I know so little, whether it's you or other guests we have in, and I learn so much. And essentially today, we're going to talk about the economy. We're going to bring up some terms that many of us, when we hear, we really probably couldn't articulate what those terms mean or who these people are. And often when we're in conversations with others who bring up these glossary items, we might smile and nod. But today, an opportunity to get a little bit of an education and see how some of what we may hear on the news and these headlines impacts us, hold it up to scripture, and see how we can apply what we know to either be active in the community or make plans in our own finances to parry, dodge, and weave some of what's being thrown at us on a regular basis. And Brian, I mentioned headlines. Some of the things that recently, and well, really most of the time, one way or another, good or bad, we hear things like the Federal Reserve or right now, I guess, growing deficits, and so many other things. You know, who are they, Brian?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and hopefully as we define some of these entities and give you some language, you can sound really smart this weekend, you know, either talking to friends on Sunday at church, or maybe if you're catching up on a football game over the weekend, you can drop some of these terms and sound like the smart guy in the room.
Yeah, and you and I have talked recently about the Federal Reserve and interest rates, mm-hmm. and how it impacts the economy to a certain extent, but we're going to go into a little more depth today. I've got my pen and pad ready. I'm ready to take notes. Where do we start, Brian?
Well, I think it's good to start by defining some of the key entities and terms that I think all Americans should be familiar with, but unfortunately, we just don't have the financial literacy as a nation to really have a grasp of this. So there's institutions and forces at play that definitely impact our day-to-day lives that we don't always fully understand. And what I thought we'd focus on today is really the difference between what's happening in the federal government, and you could even say the state and local government in terms of taxes and spending, and what's happening at the Federal Reserve, which is a different institution. So we could start by defining some of these terms. And what we'll use is the term fiscal, which is fiscal policy, which is the policies set forth by the federal government, the policies of taxation and borrowing. So when you use some terms such as the debt and the deficit, those are fiscal terms. And then there's monetary policy. So money policy, and a monetary policy is what's set forth by the Federal Reserve. So let's draw a big line between those. If you could imagine a piece of paper right now with a big old marker right down the middle, you've got fiscal on one side, monetary on the other. And the reason both are important is both have significant influence in our lives. So as we define both, let's talk about, you know how they impact us just as Americans living our lives every day and borrowing money and spending money and paying our taxes. So the fiscal side, that's obviously dictated by Congress, and bills, spending bills are then signed off by the president. So the fiscal side, we have an influence there because we get to vote on the folks that are going to go and establish fiscal policy, such as tax rates and spending. And the concerns there right now, for example, are record deficits. So let's define that term. Deficit, think of it, if the government had a credit card, the mm-hmm. deficit is how much they're adding to the balance of that credit card each month. And the debt is the total balance of that card. So the debt and the deficit, people interchange those terms, I think, incorrectly sometimes. Right. So the deficit is how much are we spending more than we're bringing in this year or this month. And then the debt is the total balance. And both of those numbers spiked during COVID because we had a drop in revenues. So think of it from a household perspective, you don't have the income mm-hmm. and you increased your expenses because the government spent a lot of money trying to keep us out of a depression. So one thing the government can do on the fiscal side is they can stimulate the economy in the short term by taking on deficits. So think of it in terms of if the government wants to start a program, wants to spend some money, we see the immediate benefit of that. And we're seeing, I think that's what's keeping the economy moving forward right now. We've talked about this, Steve, that the economy is performing better than it was expected to be at this time. However, we also have greater debt and deficits than we thought we would have at this time of year. So in a sense, it's the fiscal part. The federal government is borrowing more than we anticipated to stimulate programs. That money ripples through into the economy and has a positive benefit. So if Congress wants to cut taxes, for example, that's fiscal stimulus. That's putting more money in the hands of Americans.
Right.
If they want to take debt to stimulate programs, that's stimulus. If they want to increase taxes, that's a fiscal program that might decrease growth because you're taking money away from the spending power of Americans and then theoretically doing something else with it. So a lot on the fiscal side is what we think about when we think about government. And that needs to be thought of very separately than what's happening with interest rates and the Fed. Okay. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah. So, we just went through the government and fiscal policy, and then to look at monetary policy as set up by, the Federal Reserve.
Yep. So the Federal Reserve is the U.S. central bank. And the central bank system is basically a collection of banks, dictate monetary policy, that control the flow of money amongst the economy. And this was created in the early 1900s as a way to stabilize the growing economy, because without monetary policy, the thought would be that you would have more significant booms and busts. So the idea of the Federal Reserve is to try to smooth that by adjusting monetary policy. Now, what is monetary policy? What does that mean? The Federal Reserve really has two levers they can pull. So unlike the fiscal side, the government side, where they have debt and spending and they have taxation, the Federal Reserve side, they have two levers. They can either change interest rates higher or lower, or they can increase their balance sheet, it's called, by creating new money that goes into the economy, new dollars. And we've seen both of those. We'll talk in our next segment about how that's played out in the last few years. So what we see recently, for example, when you hear interest rates are going up, that's not, you know, the Joe Biden or the Congress increasing interest rates. That is the Federal Reserve responding to the current economic environment and deciding that higher interest rates are a good thing. So the way the Federal Reserve works is if the economy is growing too quickly and inflation is a problem, they increase the interest rates.
It is, Brian.
It is. So right now, that's definitely the focus. And that has been the focus for the last year and a half, 2 years. So the Federal Reserve is trying to slow down inflation by actually slowing the economy by increasing interest rates. Higher rates means less lending, creates constraints in the economy, and slows things down. If the economy is sluggish and they want to stimulate it, like we did during COVID, then interest rates are decreased, which makes it easier for people to borrow money and move it amongst the economy. And there's other factors that ripple into that, but that's the basic sense of interest rates.
It's like the Federal Reserve has their hand on the nation's throttle.
Exactly. I like to say the Federal Reserve has their foot on the gas pedal or the brake.
Yeah.
So if they want to grow the economy, they hit the gas, which means lowering interest rates.
Right.
If they want to slow the economy, they either let up on the gas or they pump the brakes. And right now, the Federal Reserve has definitely been pumping, if not slamming, on the brakes.
Now, and as we said at the beginning of this, we're going to talk about how you can be involved in the community and be active to help make changes in some of these areas, and then also in your own personal finances. And you know, when it comes to in the community and government and nationwide, worldwide, you know, one of the things, and maybe we'll get to this later, but I think often we hear words like trillion, mm-hmm. and I'm not sure most of us have wrapped our brain around, you know, you hear million, billion, trillion, and to most of us, that's just a ton, a bunch,
mm-hmm.
you know? But I have seen, you know, illustrations, like a warehouse of bills stacked, and, you know, here's a million, here's a billion, here's a trillion. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't seen that,
As our conversation continues and some of these numbers come up, I would encourage the listener to go find one of those illustrations.
Definitely.
They understand the urgency of having numbers like, you know, just a couple, 3 years ago was 19.
Yep.
Is now 30 some trillion.
Yep. And again, let's go back to the terms we're using. That's the debt. So that's the federal government's liabilities. That's what they owe. The trillion number gets thrown around a lot these days. Our deficit this year, with the amount we spend more than we take in this year as a federal government, will be somewhere between $1.5 and $2 trillion just this year alone. So we're dramatically overspending. And it's just, you know, we're way outside of what we'd call fiscal responsibility. So there's a term you can drop this weekend when you want to sound smart. Say, I would just like to see more fiscal responsibility out of our government. That's a great way to say we need to better manage our balance sheet as a nation.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
When you're talking about the forces at play in this first segment, specifically, you know, we're looking at the government and the Federal Reserve, and you mentioned the government and what they do. And, one of the other headlines is the budget, balancing the budget. And I almost chuckle when I hear that, because a budget is something you stick to. Why should I be that upset at the government? Most of us probably don't have a budget.
Right.
We do, but we don't put it on paper. And most of us that do probably don't stick to it.
Yeah. In a minute, we'll talk about the biblical principles that we call transcendent principles, because they are just as true for Steve or Brian as they are for my company, the state, and the federal government. You can go up the chain, and I think the same rules hold true, and we are not following those principles.
Well, it's going to be a great hour of information, and we're just one portion through it. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, Brian, I guess we'll look at a recent history and how some of what you just covered as far as the forces at play, how have they been playing? We'll get to that after the break on ABQ Connect. We are in the midst of a conversation on this Friday financial update with Brian Cochran of John Moore Associates, which, by the way, we mentioned last time that Brian had just posted on the Insights tab some information about real estate, which we talked about last month. But Brian's a wealth of information at people's fingertips at johnmoore.com that's free to access.
Yep. And I'd say, especially if you're someone who's thinking about making a change in the real estate world, the webinar we did with a realtor as a guest speaker, I thought had a lot of great concepts that she helped us with around buyers, sellers, different considerations, because this is a unique and challenging real estate market. And if that's something that you're, you know, living through right now in terms of facing those challenges as a buyer or seller, I'd highly recommend just taking the time to watch that video and take some of those lessons.
All right. Well, go check that out. And if you just tuned in, we spent our first segment talking about defining really the forces at play in our country when it comes to money and finances, and the two being the government and the Federal Reserve, the government essentially covering fiscal responsibility, and the Federal Reserve, the monetary policy. And Brian, in this segment, we teased it when we headed into the break. We're going to take a little bit of a look at how these forces at play have been playing recently. When you say recent history, what are you thinking?
Let's go back to 2008, and we'll just spend a minute on the financial crisis, which had a big impact, especially on the monetary side. We had things post-2008 we'd never seen before. And then we'll talk about COVID time period and since, because there were extremes in both cases that were, at the time, unprecedented. So if we go back to 2008, the great financial crisis, most listeners probably remember it very vividly. Some of the younger listeners might be thinking, oh, I remember hearing about that a little bit, but it wasn't really part of my financial experience as an adult. But when the economy basically was collapsing in 2008, at the time, the Fed chairman was a man named Ben Bernanke. And the reason why he was important is because he was the Fed chair. So again, we talk about fiscal policy, monetary policy. So 2008, Barack Obama is elected as president. So he's now head of the fiscal side along with Congress. But the monetary side, we had Ben Bernanke. And he was the right guy probably for the time, because he was a student of the Great Depression. and what the government did right or wrong during that period. And his biggest lesson learned was that the Federal Reserve needed to act quickly in that time. So what did that mean at the time? So at the time, the Federal Reserve had a balance sheet, which means the Federal Reserve had assets on their books of about $1 trillion. And they immediately doubled that basically during that period. So what does that mean? The Federal Reserve did two things. Again, this is now monetary policy. They dropped interest rates to zero, which had never really been done in recent history. So that made lending, you know, less expensive. It tried to get more money moving in the economy again after the 2008 shock.
Yeah. And, okay, real quick, at 0%, less expensive, it makes it free, but it must not make it free because banks and institutions stayed open. How did they make money?
So yeah, when they drop the rates to zero, what that means is you're getting zero on your checking and savings, mm-hmm. and banks might only be charging 3 or 4% for a mortgage.
Okay.
So it created a more affordable environment to go back out and for people to go and try to buy homes again. So they did that. What Ben Bernanke did during that time that was unprecedented is they did something called quantitative easing. And we'll call that QE, so quantitative easing. And what that means is the Federal Reserve, again, this is not the government, but the Federal Reserve, the banking system, basically created new dollars, in a sense, printed money, and then pushed that money into the economy, basically by buying back bad assets from bank balance sheet. So the Federal Reserve has the ability to create new dollars. They did that, and they used those dollars to buy the mortgages and other bad things off the bank balance sheets. That allowed banks to get back to business and not go under.
Okay, now you talk about more. You mentioned buying bad mortgages in 2008, and I think those of us who've seen what came out of Hollywood,
The Big Short,
yeah. The real estate market, mortgage and real estate, was a big cause of what happened
exactly then.
And I'm going to guess that's not unusual because what are our two biggest expenses? As individuals, our families, and a mortgage, and a car loan.
Yep, and we abused some of the biblical principles around proper use of debt during that time, which created the bubble that burst in 2008. So this quantitative easing period afterward was the Federal Reserve's way to use its policies to try to shore up the financial system in a sense. So it gave. It secured the bank balance sheets so they could go back to business and not suffer for the consequences of their actions, really, in a way. It also helped bail out the government because the government guaranteed a lot of the mortgages. So a lot of what they bought were government-backed mortgage securities, basically. So you go through this period of 2008 through, let's call it 2016-17, where a lot of that was happening. And at that time, I would say there wasn't anything meaningful that came from the government side, the fiscal side, that helped the economy grow. So if someone says, wow, the Obama administration did a really good job growing the economy from 2008 till his term ended in 2016, I would say, yes, the economy grew in that period, but I can't really point, I'm not trying to be overly political here, but I can't point to a specific policy that happened during those 8 years of his administration that says, well, if he hadn't passed that bill, or if he hadn't pushed for that policy, we wouldn't have had a good economy.
Right.
So if the economy is going to grow, it's going to happen for one of two things. Either something's going right fiscally or something's going right from the monetary perspective. And from 2008 to 2016, the economy grew because interest rates were at zero the entire time,
right,
which was unprecedented. And the Federal Reserve created new dollars and fixed the mistakes that the government had made with all these bad mortgages, right, and the banks had made, and sort of kept the economy going, not, because of what happened out of Congress and in the Obama presidency, but sort of in spite of. There was a lot of division during that time. Our debt was downgraded at one point. There was a lot that went wrong during that 16-year period.
I think I have a great illustration for what you're talking about as far as, say, Obama getting credit for the good economy between 2008 and 2016. Now, the car number 5 may have crossed the finish line and won the race in that driver, but what people don't know is that the pit crew
right
were responsible for making sure they had the right tires on.
Right. And so I would say they did a good job not blowing anything up from the fiscal side.
Yeah.
But there's nothing, when people say, I say, well, what specific policy can you point to that created that good economy? And really it was the monetary policy. So then Obama finishes his term. Trump becomes president. So let's talk about what happened then from a monetary policy and a fiscal policy. On the fiscal side, Trump was a proponent of lower taxes, especially for high-income Americans and businesses.
Which, as we said earlier, encourages it's getting people to go out and spend money.
Yeah, it's another way to stimulate the economy is to try to lower taxes. Now, the trade-off of that is he accepted greater deficits. So a lot of conservatives like to say, well, I'd like to see Trump be president again because he's more fiscally responsible. Well, the deficits then were less than they are now, but he did create more deficits through the tax cuts. It did stimulate the economy. And what was important about that is at the time, the economy was stable enough that the Federal Reserve, the monetary side of the equation, was starting to create more resistance to the economy. Rates were starting to rise. So had Trump not done something fiscally, we might have seen more of an economic slowdown during his presidency from 2016 to 2020, or early 2017 to 2020.
You know, it sounds like a fine-tuned machine when it's running well. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's not. And you have to have, for things to work right on the fiscal side, you have to have collaboration, you know, and cooperation, I should say, between Congress and the president.
Right.
And when we don't have that, it's really hard to create fiscal improvements because you can't agree of what would improve the situation. So from 2016 till 2020, basically, we had the Trump tax cuts. And monetary policy was more of a headwind at that time, a slight one, but a headwind. But the fiscal policy was working more in the favor. So it's kind of the opposite of the Obama presidency, where there was nothing really coming out fiscally that helped, but the monetary policy was good. So get to the end of 2020. We all know what happens in 2020. COVID hits, and forget about any sense of fiscal responsibility. We just had to keep ourselves out of a deep depression caused by the economic slowdown that of economic shutdown.
And
of
you can have the best plans of mice and men for the race that I illustrated a little while ago, but who knew about the surprise hailstorm?
Yep. So really, we had a Goldilocks economy. We had the best economy probably of your lifetime, Steve, going into COVID. We had low inflation, full employment, wage growth was incredible. We had double-digit wage growth against for minorities and low-income people in 2019, highest wage growth we'd seen in that group. The whole economy was just moving forward in a very positive way right up until COVID hit. And all of a sudden now the economy goes to zero. And so both the fiscal side, the federal government, and the monetary side went to work trying to mask the effects of COVID shutdowns, which my personal opinion, and you can read a lot of great macro research, says that was the worst mistake ever by a government, was shutting down the economy. It did not have the positive benefits. That's for another show.
Yeah.
But basically what happened was the federal government passed a bunch of bills.
By the way, that's spending, like turning off the ignition in the middle of the race.
Yep. Yep. So we just, we just died right in the middle of the track. So the federal government went to work saying, okay, we're going to give PPP loans for small businesses so they can keep paying people and keep their rent and their lights on. We're going to pay extra unemployment benefits and stimulus checks. Those are all fiscal things they did.
Right.
How did they fund that? The total bill for all those programs was $5 trillion with a T. Well, they funded that because on the monetary side, there was cooperation between the two sides of the equation. The monetary side, the Federal Reserve, basically created about $5 trillion new dollars that we didn't have before.
And we're talking literally, the Federal Reserve are the ones that say, turn on the printer.
Yep. And there's not a physical printer anymore. It's digital. So they say it's more like the Bank of Steve gets a call from the Federal Reserve and they say, hey, we want you to
create a bunch of IOUs.
We need you to go buy a $1 trillion of U.S. debt. And they say, I don't have $1 trillion. And the Federal Reserve says, click, 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 look again.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, okay, I've got it now.
Right.
In a sense, that's what's happening. So the Federal Reserve creates $5 trillion new dollars. The federal government borrows those dollars at very low interest rates because the Federal Reserve set low interest rates. And spends those dollars on programs. Now, here's where it comes down to average Americans and the effect. What happens when you create $5 trillion new dollars, especially at a time where supply chains are very limited? You get inflation. And so this comes back to, how does this impact me? Well, the Trump tax cuts, maybe you paid less tax. Okay, so that helps or hurts you. You know, you get to 2020. Now, the federal government's spending money it doesn't have.
And during Trump, you create spending habits.
Right, right. And now you get all the stimulus money pushed out, and you have more dollars chasing the same or less goods and services, and you get inflation. And that's obviously been an impact for all of us. So that's, I think, a pretty good recent history of 2008 till now. And now what we're living through today is the Federal Reserve trying to unwind all of that extra stimulus they did during COVID, and the federal government trying to learn to live on its budget again, which it's failing at miserably. And we can talk about that maybe in the next segment.
Okay. And also on the way, a look into what the biblical worldview is on these issues that we're talking about, and how we can each apply those to our lives, or to our families, to our companies, to our government, and how you can be active in helping to make all of that happen. We'll get to it as we continue our Friday Financial Update with Brian Cochran of John Moore Associates. It's coming up after the break on ABQ Connect. Well, we're going to school today. If you just tuned in, we're in the midst of a conversation with Brian Cochran from John Moore Associates, and we started the show defining the forces at play in our economy, and then in the last segment, looking at how those forces have been playing in recent history, basically rewinding back to 2008 and bringing it through the pandemic, and really bringing us to where we are now. Brian, if you can recap that a little bit, and then maybe we can move on and look at look at all of this economy through a biblical worldview lens, as far as where we are now and where, God willing, we can head if we would only apply those biblical principles.
Right. So, quick summary. So we talked about we differentiated between the federal government, who's in charge of fiscal policy. That's borrowing money as a government, and taxation, raising money from the populace. And then we differentiate that from the monetary policy, which is the Federal Reserve. So when you hear about the Fed's raising rates, that's different than the federal government. That is the Federal Reserve, which is a central bank for the U.S. who dictates how much money is in circulation and what the interest rates are each year. So understanding both of those is important. One thing I didn't touch on, Steve, I wanted to come back to is, you know, where did we participate as part of this? But one of the key roles of the Federal Reserve, or the key player there, is the Federal Reserve Chairman, which is right now Jerome Powell. And that person is nominated by the president. So when you ask, well, how do I influence the Federal Reserve? It's presidential elections, their nominations. We know about Supreme Court justices and other nominations that the president makes, but also monetary policy is dictated by someone nominated by the president, confirmed by the Senate. So if you think about those two sides, our vote matters in both worlds,
right?
Because our vote will impact who's in Congress.
And obviously, they're going to nominate someone who they feel is going to work with their fiscal policy.
Mm-hmm. And there's supposed to be a pretty good break between the fiscal and the monetary, but there's a lot of suspicion that, you know, the Fed doesn't want to impact the economy negatively before an election, for example, and have an influence an election with their policies. But, you know, theoretically, there's a divide there. The president shouldn't be calling the Federal Reserve Chairman and saying raise rates or lower rates.
And the Fed isn't the only area in our nation's government now that has potentially become politicized.
Right.
It's a different landscape that we're in now, seemingly, than we were in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago.
And theoretically, they should all have the same goals, right? A prospering country.
Right.
You know, a stable economy.
Well, that would be a biblical worldview, Brian, applying biblical principles.
So let's talk about some of those biblical principles that we often talk about in this context. So one of the first ones, just anytime you talk about government, there's Romans 13, verse 1 and 2 says, obey the government, for God is the one who has put it there. So we often pray for our government, for our leaders, whether they're people we elected or voted for or not. We should pray for wisdom for our leaders, because we are meant to obey the government. We're not supposed to be defiant of our state and local government. There are exceptions to that. That's a whole sermon. We'll let Skip do that. But that's key, is that we're supposed to obey the government, which includes this idea of fiscal responsibility, which for our part is usually meant to be paying our taxes, right? So we're supposed to pay our taxes. And that's key. So the Bible verse there is often referred to as in Matthew 22:21, which is render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's.
I love though they're Jesus, you know, hands on. Turn over. Whose face is on there?
Yeah, show me what you got. One of my coworkers is a coin collector. He actually has one of those coins with the Caesar's face on it, and has the Bible verse in the little case. And
that's pretty
neat. You know, he's a passionate coin collector. But I think the principle there goes beyond money. Obviously, the idea there, I think, is there's things that are of this world, and
right.
But then what we owe God is love and faith, and God is responsible for our eternal soul. That's different than just paying our taxes.
Right.
But I think those principles put together kind of set the tone for, you know, we're not supposed to say, well, you're not spending wisely, so I'm going to skip my taxes and go to jail.
Because the verse does then, and to God, what is God's?
Yes, yes. So that's key. I think we are supposed to live in compliance with the government. And so it's important, you know, as believers that we acknowledge that. It's also important that we participate in that system and try to elect people who represent our values. So what values should we represent from a fiscal point of view? We have other things we vote about. You know, it could be you're motivated by pro-life issues or other, you know, issues of faith that people hold true. But from a fiscal point of view, I think you should vote for people who want fiscal responsibility. And what does that mean? Well, the Bible warns us a lot about debt, and the government has debt decisions to make. In Proverbs, was it 22:7, I believe, it's, the borrower is a slave to the lender. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is slave to the lender. So when we are borrowing money as a government, who are we becoming slaves to? Who is the lender? You know, it's other nations a lot of times. It's institutions.
Right now, most of us understand China's probably at the top of that list.
Japan has traditionally been higher up. But what we're seeing now is those other governments are pulling back on their willingness to buy our debit.
Why, Brian?
It has to do with their own monetary policies and what they're trying to do. Okay. There's a lot that goes into currencies and all that. It's not necessarily a political dig on us, but everyone's trying to right-size their own balance sheets. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of factors go into play there. But that's key, is that, you know, if the borrower's slave to the lender, if I get a mortgage, right, I am now a slave to the bank. I have to work for them, basically. So who are we working for as a government if we have a lot of debt? And that's key. I think we need to not take that lightly, because if our debt continues to grow at the rate it is now, if our deficits continue to expand year by year through poor fiscal management by our government, we're going to find out pretty quickly who we're slaves to, because we're going to be begging for new debt to operate our government, and there may not be people who want to lend us that money, which is going to really put a pinch on our government programs. So that's key. And so when you're voting for someone, you know, looking for, you know, look at their websites. What do they say about fiscal responsibility? And what I always look for when I look at candidates is, I don't care what they said, what have they done in the past?
Right.
Actions speak louder than words.
Yeah. You know, often when I'm considering who I'd like to vote for, I mean, there's all kinds of things go into deciding who to vote for. However, you know, someone who has, for example, I'm a little more interested in considering a governor than I am someone who is just a representative, in that they've been a CEO, they've sat in that seat, and they have experience. I guess you could say a legislator would have experience in balancing a budget.
Right.
You know, just things to consider. I appreciate that you said that. You know, as we're considering who we vote for, what have they done?
Exactly. I recently was at a presentation by one of our national representatives. I'll just leave it at that. And he was bragging about all these wonderful programs and the benefits to New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And in a 45-minute talk, in a time where we have record deficit spending and record national debt, never once did he say the word spending, debt, deficit, interest rates, any of these things.
Right.
Related, you know, so they want to tout their programs.
Pay no attention to this man behind the curtain.
But that's a big factor, and it's a growing factor that is going to need to be addressed by a brave politician at some point to come out and tell the truth and acknowledge the problem we have with spending. I mean, basically, if you or I managed our finances that way, Steve, the bank would stop giving us money.
Yeah.
And that's what will happen eventually to the U.S. government. So we're violating those biblical principles around debt. And what we often tell our clients is there's no abolishment of debt in the Bible necessarily. It doesn't say you can't have debt or all debt's bad, but there's a lot of warnings about debt. So you should only take debt clearly acknowledging the potential trade-offs and repercussions, because debt always presumes on the future. If I'm buying something today that I'm going to pay for later, I'm presuming that I will have that money tomorrow, a month from now, 6 years from now, to pay that. So you take a 30-year mortgage, you better be ready to make 30 years of payments. That's key.
Now, don't hear me wrong. Cash is king.
Yeah.
You don't hear me wrong.
That's the perspective.
Yeah.
And when you see biblical warnings about money, one of the most popular is in Paul's letter to Timothy, where he says, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil.
Right.
And that gets twisted to say money is the root of all evil. No. Money itself is just money. But when you love it, when you worship money, it's its own God. And actually, I believe the original scripture there was, it refers to money as
a root of all kinds.
Yeah. So you're worshiping money.
Yeah.
And I think as a nation, when we are creating trillions of new dollars and then borrowing it from ourselves, basically, you're creating this reliance. You're worshiping the money. And there's cultural issues we need to fix, but we're ignoring those and we're just printing more money and borrowing it. As opposed to focusing on the values and principles that would help us improve as a nation fiscally, you know, and in our families and everything else. So I think when you think of the biblical principles, again, I mentioned this word earlier, they're transcendent principles. So just as you and I should be smart with our money and I should do it with my business and our state should be wise with money, the federal government should also be wise with money.
Yeah.
Using what, you know, how do we determine wisdom? Well, we have timeless and transcendent principles right here in scripture that warn us like crazy about debt. So we should not be growing our debt every month by $150 to $200 billion.
I love that you routinely use the word transcendent, and that going back to what the Bible tells us about our God, that he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, and his statutes, they don't change. There's plenty that we can learn. And actually, in the minute or two that we have before the end of the segment, Brian, how would you encourage the listener to effectively equip themselves to follow these biblical principles when it comes to finances?
Yeah, there's a lot of wonderful people who have thought about these concepts of biblical finance and put them into books. Ronald Blue is probably one of the greatest. He's written several books. So just look up Ronald Blue on Amazon. You'll see a whole list of his books. Master Your Money is out there as another book. You know, there's just a lot out there from these biblical thought leaders. So if you just typed biblical finance in Amazon, you're going to see a flurry of topics come up. Ronald Blue is definitely one of the preeminent thought leaders in this space, and he's written on everything from, you know, contentment to basic money principles to estate planning, you know, you name it, he's covered it.
I would say for the early riser here in Albuquerque to tune in at 4:30 in the morning, at that time you can hear Faith and Finance. We air that daily, and then it actually re-airs later in the morning. You can hear it at 11:30 just before lunch, and they are routinely walking through.
Yeah.
Well, what you get to hear is whether they're talking with a guest or taking calls from people just like us, Brian, that are trying to work through these issues. But they're routinely doing that. I know you're a strong supporter of that,
and the FaithFi app as well. If you download that, they will push scripture to you and blog posts, and they also have 1 minute segments. There's all kinds of content they create there, bite-sized content that can sort of just drip and encourage these principles on you, and to say, okay, what's my encouragement this week or today about how I should be thinking about money? There's over 2,000 verses about money and material things in the Bible. Jesus talked about it more than hell, heaven, or prayer. this is our greatest potential conflict or distraction from loving God is loving money.
He knows what we need.
Yeah. He knows our hearts, and he knows what's going to take us astray. Yeah. And in our culture, I think nowhere is that more prevalent than in our current culture in the U.S. We're the wealthiest nation of all time. Therefore, we have the greatest risk of this as individuals and as a nation, is what we're mostly talking about today. So, you know, knowing that, it'll really impact the way you think of the world.
All right. Well, if you just tuned in, we're spending a full hour with Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates, johnmoore.com. And again, we encourage you to check the Insights tab, covering much of the stuff that we talk about on a weekly basis. But listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, put a bow on our conversation, and we'll do that right after this on ABQ Connect. Our guest in studio today, Brian Cochran with John Moore Associates. And Brian typically spends the final segment of ABQ Connect with us on Friday. He's doing that today, but he spent the full hour with us. Glad to have you in studio, Brian. And it's been an insightful hour. And I do hope that the listener, I was taking notes. I hope the listener was taking notes. Earlier in our conversation, more than once, I went to the racetrack as far as an illustration. Now the question is, Brian, taking what we've heard on today's program and looking at the landscape of where we are as a nation and as individuals and families in this economy, how do we cross the finish line? How do we win?
Yep. So, first off, we touched on this, praying for our leaders, praying wisdom, whether it's someone you voted for or not, praying for wise decision-making by the people who lead our government and who lead the Federal Reserve, really. You know, the folks that are going to influence the lives of not only Americans, but really the whole world is dependent on our economy. So praying for wisdom for those folks is so important, and praying that they make decisions that follow the timeless, transcendent, and true principles of the Bible.
God was pretty good at supplying Solomon with the needed wisdom in this area, wasn't he?
Yeah. And it's all there. He captured a lot of it for us. So, so that's key. In terms of your personal actions, voting wisely. And in this case, with fiscal responsibility, again, I'd mentioned it before, look at their websites. Does this person who's running have a history of fiscal responsibility? And what are they saying? If it doesn't show up anywhere on their website as a candidate for a federal office, Congress, Senate, or president, if they have no comment about the debt situation right now, that's a red flag to me, because we are living in unprecedented extremes of debt. It has to be addressed. And if they're not talking about it, then I think they're ignoring what could be the greatest issue for our nation going forward. So looking at that, you know, educating yourself and voting for people who are fiscally responsible.
I got a quick question, and not to pigeonhole you into a candidate, but are you hearing any of the there are a dozen candidates on the Republican side, and I'm guessing two or three on the Democratic side, and others, whether they're independent. Are you hearing anyone that you would say? I've heard them say.
Yeah, I've heard a little bit. It's kind of funny with the way Washington works these days. You have to be like an alternate, you know, outside candidate to be fiscally responsible, because the established people are so used to being fiscally responsible, it's not even on their radar.
Yeah,
there's definitely comments about it from all candidates. I'd say Vivek Ramaswamy has been one of the most outspoken. I think it's because of his business background. He understands managing finances wisely. He may not check all the boxes in terms of, you know, holistically biblical principles.
Now, but you mentioned business. Yeah. Does that mean Trump's been talking about the economy as well?
Yeah, he acknowledges the spending problems and the economy as well. So, I think you look at each one's individual take on it and see which one makes the most sense to you. But and that's not an endorsement of anybody. No, it's just that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I think what we would say is look at all of them and see how it lines up with these biblical principles that we covered in today's show.
Right.
And other biblical principles you may read about as you listen to FaithFi or you go through the app or read Ron, as you say, Ron Blue?
Ron Blue, yeah. The other thing I always tell people is if they start talking about all these great programs they want to do, any candidate, the simple question is at what cost?
Yeah, what pays for it?
Yeah, it sounds great to give everybody this and everybody that and stimulate here and build bridges and roads and fiber optic networks and pay for healthcare, and okay, at what cost? Who, you know, who will pay for this, and what are the trade-offs involved with that? Because right now, no one's asking about the cost. The last thing I would say in terms of your own personal finances, a lot of what we talked about today, debt, taxes, interest rates, a lot of it impacts people who have debt on their balance sheets. You know, if the Fed wants to raise rates, I don't care if I don't have any debt.
Right.
So living within your means and being wise with your own fiscal situation, your own debt, is a really good way to live to help sort of remove yourself from at least some components of this.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear
them talk about it on Faith and Finance. Mm-hmm. Someone who is in a situation where it's overwhelming to them as far as getting out of debt, what are some ways you would encourage them to work towards that?
Well, there's two sides of the debt equation. There's your income and your spending that drive debt. So you either need to find ways to increase your income through a second job, or increasing your value at your current employer, or fix the spending side, which starts with being aware of where mm-hmm. your money's going, and then making sacrifices and prioritizing your fiscal safety over maybe extra comforts, pleasures, things like that. Most people aren't doing great on both sides of that. I remember one time we had someone call in who was talking about, well, you know, I feel like I'm doing everything right and I can't manage my finances. And the person had a $1,200 a month car payment. It's like, well, it was real easy to figure out, okay, well, you chose to buy a car that you should not have purchased and it's costing you a lot of money. You need to downsize your vehicle and that'll create all kinds of margin. There's decisions we can make and things within our control. But controlling those things, living a contented lifestyle, it's not godliness that gives us great gain. It's godliness with contentment is great gain. Is what the Bible tells us. And that contentment part is so huge, to live a life that says, God's given me everything I need. I don't need everything I want. And I'm going to live a life of contentment. And that's a great place to start with your own personal finances.
Okay. And we mentioned earlier in the show too, navigating some of this. Some people can do it on their own, Brian. Mm-hmm. But for those who are feeling overwhelmed, even after we've gone through and defined things and explained things, that are wanting to get some quality information, it is possible to go and, you know, a workman is worthy of his wages. So if someone's going to do that for you, you pay them for it. But it is possible, isn't it, Brian, to spend that money to have someone do that for you and in the end, financially, be in a better place than you were mm-hmm. prior.
Yep. Yeah, seeking professional advice is definitely one way to stay on the right track and have an accountability partner on this walk we're all living, this stewardship journey we're all participating in. For a lot of people, what I would say, if you're just getting started with this, think about getting the FaithFi app, mm-hmm. download that, and pay the monthly fee where you can have your accounts automatically synced to that app and tracked so you can start to get a sense of your finances while also getting biblical wisdom and encouragement. If you are embarking with a new marriage or a new step in your financial life, it's always a good time to maybe consider something like Financial Peace University, which is a Dave Ramsey program, none of these programs are perfect, but it will give you some encouragement and some principles to live by to help you be smart with your money. There's things that you can do out there that are not expensive or complex. And for those who have more resources and can afford it, paying a professional advisor, financial advisor, preferably a certified kingdom advisor, to give them advice is another path.
All right. Well, Brian, as always, we appreciate your time and look forward to getting another update in our final segment next week.
Yep, my pleasure.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a great weekend and join us again Monday and every weekday afternoon, 1 o'clock on ABQ Connect.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.